Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? Yeah, not great for our already struggling environment. That's why I'm so excited to talk about our partner today, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. And the concept is pretty simple. You just fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. I literally just tried out the laundry tablet, and instead of having to bring my huge container like I normally do down the hall, I just brought the one tablet and my clothes came out so clean, just as clean as normal. I'm fully on board. It just makes my life easier and I'm helping the environment. And the best part, Blue Land has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dateable. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/dateable for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dateable to get 15% off.
The Dateable podcast is an insider's look into modern dating that the Huffington Post calls one of the top 10 podcasts about love and sex. On each episode, we'll talk to real daters about everything from sex parties to sex droughts, date fails to diaper fetishes, and first moves to first loves. I'm your host, Yue Xu, former dating coach turned dating sociologist. You'll also hear from my co-host and producer, Julie Krafchik, as we explore this crazy dateable world. What's up, Dateables? Welcome to another episode of Dateable, a show all about modern dating, where we like to dig into the whys of people's behavior and why they say the things that they say. We are in the off season officially. Mm-hmm. We just wrapped season 12. It does not mean the content stops. It just means that we're taking a little break to figure out what season 13 looks like for you all. Is there a theme? Who are the experts we want to bring in? Mm-hmm. What are the stories we want to touch upon? But in the off season, we still have these regular episodes for you of bonus content.
Yes, we never stop, never sleep over here. But happy Pride, UA.
Happy Pride. That's right.
Well, the episode you're about to listen to is we actually did a live stream last week all about Pride, and it was so freaking amazing. We decided to turn it into this bonus episode. This was not on our agenda, but it was in the moment. We're like, this is way too good. It needs to get shared with the rest of the world that might not be in the Facebook group. Or we also did a live stream on YouTube. That was fun.
We had a false start, though.
We did. And we had some technical glitches. UA and I were live for like 10 minutes and no one could see us. So good times.
It was actually really hilarious. We went live and Julie and I were like turning up the energy.
Yeah.
And then our guest came on and he was like, I don't think we're live.
Yeah. It was like one of those epic moments that doing this for 5 years, you're just like, how the fuck did we do that? But we managed to.
It's bound to happen.
I was like, I'm going to blame it on Facebook's new user interface because they changed it. But it was probably a user error. Probably forgot to just hit that button that says go live.
It's bound to happen. We've never gone live on YouTube before. It's bound to happen. So okay.
Yeah, but we somehow messed it up on YouTube and Facebook, which was the best.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We weren't live, and then we did. We were not
the stars of the show anyways. So the stars of the show, they really, like, everything. I just walked away from that just being like, holy shit, I feel like I learned so much. I feel so much more, like, connected to all people in our community. And, you know, I think a big part of this was, like, how can we all be allies? Whether you're in the LGBTQ community or not, how can you be an ally? And we were lucky enough to have one of our hosts and moderators, Ryan, and his boyfriend, who we met during COVID, who has now joined the group. Yes. Also, Matt, who I love so much. He's just the most adorable.
So sweet.
And he is now a Dateable listener also. We're like, that's what you do. You find your person, then you both become Dateable listeners and you stay Dateable together. This
and
is the evolution.
In the family with
exactly.
us.
Exactly. Because staying Dateable does not end after you're not single. But we had the two of them. And then they also, I think one of the things that I'm really glad Ryan and Matt pushed for was intersectionality. So they really made it like that we need to have a lot of diverse representation. And I think I just like never fully registered it until they said it. But they were like, when people think of LGBTQ, they think of
gay men.
Gay men. Yeah.
Gay white men specifically. Mm-hmm. And they were like, while that is some people, it is definitely not the colors of the rainbow. It is not representing everyone. So they really made a stance to be like, we need to include people of different ethnicities and races. We need to include people of, you know, that are bisexual, that are asexual, like genderqueer. Like, we really hit it all, which was amazing. So I really want to just like give Ryan and Matt another shout out for just like really making that push to do this, because I think it was so important. And they brought it up that the theme of Pride this year is a lot with intersectionality.
It was really enlightening for us because our mission for Dateable is to provide a platform for people to tell their stories. And in no way, shape, or form can Julie and I even represent a sliver of the LGBTQ plus community. So we tapped into Ryan and Matt and basically gave them this responsibility of holding something that was way bigger than we imagined. Because I think, admittedly, I also thought, well, as long as we have gay men represented, we're good, right? They can talk about Pride. And they really pushed us and said, ladies, we got to get more representation here. We cannot be the only people talking about our community because there's so many different facets of who we are. And it touched upon like kind of my own feelings about Asian American community. When people feel like they have one Asian American representing on a panel, they think they've checked off the box. And that's not the case. There are just so many voices out there. So this panel or this discussion that we had was also not all inclusive. Obviously, we can't be all inclusive everyone, but we try to get as much diversity as possible.
Yes. I mean, I walked away learning so much. I'm not going to even like start to go into all the learnings because I don't want to like distract from what all these people are about to say, the knowledge bombs. But I just think the sentiment in that live stream, just like I felt so like warm and fuzzy afterwards. And I think all the people that participated did as well. I feel like just the general consensus of people in the community being like, wow, that was so well spoken. Wow, I never thought about it that way. Wow, like I'm learning something new. Like that is what being Dateable is about. And like you said, Yue, like you and I bring a heteronormative perspective. Mm-hmm. And while Dateable is definitely open to all voices, like we can only go so far. So I think having the platform open that we could all continue to learn and like really stay true to our community, which is the Dateable community, in addition to all the subset communities.
Something we really want to push for all of our listeners to do is to be more open-minded to episodes that when you look at the title, you think it does not apply to you. We see it in our numbers. Some of the more fringe episodes don't get as many listens, probably because you look at the title and you're like, this doesn't have anything to do with me. I can guarantee you these episodes will probably teach you more than the episodes that you can relate to because you are looking at this from a completely different perspective. And psychologically, they always say, if you want to look at something, if you're stuck in something, and if you want to get a fresh perspective, look at it upside down. You literally go upside down, look at it. This is how I see these episodes. You're looking at dating from an upside down view, and it can give you more perspective and more insights. So we highly encourage you to go back to all the episodes that you skipped because you didn't think it related to you. Go back and re-listen because I bet you'll find some really great learnings from those.
Yeah. And it gives you empathy. I think that was the biggest thing I took away from it, too, because like I think all of us struggle with identity. Right. But I think a lot of people in the LGBTQ community really struggle with identity because you're basically we talked about this, like you live in a heteronormative world. That's what you see on TV. That's like the, you know, what you're supposed to fit into this box. And I can see why it's really challenging when you're like, I don't fit into this box. Like, what do I do from here? And that is like a lot of self-development. And while, yeah, like everyone has some self-development, I definitely think by hearing the stories of the members that spoke, it really just like put in perspective, like how much like journey people go on to like be their authentic selves. And I think that's something everyone can take away.
Think about it this way. We can all relate to not being the identity that society tells you should be. Mm-hmm. Me as a 40-year-old, my identity should be a married mother of two, and I'm not. It's the same same thing, because the default is, oh, at a certain age, at a certain stage in life, you should be this thing. But we live in a world where you can be anything, and we just mm-hmm. have to get rid of all those default settings. And this really level sets our mindset when it comes to default setting.
Anyways, this was, we're going to like, so good. We're not going to keep going because we just need to pass it over to them for continued on. But there's just so much good in this. So super excited.
I'm really, really excited for this. Something I've been doing recently. So moving on to the next topic before we talk too much about the topic we're about to talk about is something I'm really into lately is dreams. I've talked about this before. You know, I kept track of my dreams for a couple months. But recently I listened to this one, another podcast. I know. I listened
cheating
to another podcast.
Cheating on us. Just
cheating on us.
It's
and,
okay.
And this podcast is all about why your brain doesn't stop working when you're asleep. In fact, your brain is consistently trying to work on your real world problems when you're asleep. And that's why you should pay attention to your dreams, because they may offer solutions to your real life problems. So I've been keeping track of all my dreams for the last couple months, and I'm going to start organizing the dreams into categories and making sense of them. But I can already see there's one theme that has already resolved a problem for me in my work life that I've already implemented. So I'm highly encouraging you all, and you too, Julie, just as soon as you wake up, just try to remember what is the last dream you had. I can guarantee you in like 3 months, you can see a theme, and then it can maybe help you solve something.
Interesting. I mean, I have so many questions, but first of all, this could be the unlocking of, you know, why we're in whatever state we are, whatever flux we are with our relationships and dating lives. So I think that's super fascinating. I've had some really fucked up dreams, so I'd love to know like where they come from, but you ain't, don't leave me hanging. Like, how did it help you? I need to know.
Oh my gosh. So it's, so your dreams are from the subconscious and they're without your feelings and emotions. Your brain is not filtering your dream. So your dreams are kind of like the free for all, and it's kind of scary sometimes, right? That's why some of us have these really fucked up dreams. But I'm starting to see this theme in my dreams where I see other people's happiness and I transform myself into them. I don't know how to like best describe this, but I would observe someone's accomplishment or celebration from a third party, from a third person perspective. And then by the end of the dream, I've transformed into that person. So that tells me that in my real life, I can't be so passive in observing other people's accomplishments that I can become this myself. And if I believe that I can accomplish this, then I can live it and feel it instead of just dreaming it. And that's been a major light bulb moment for me.
That is so deep. I've had some dreams where I've hooked up with people that I'm like, why? This is not someone I would ever in real life. What does that mean?
I see that. I don't know. I have those dreams too.
Like random ass people. Yeah.
Random ass people. I cheat on my boyfriend in my dreams. And in my dreams, I know I'm cheating on him. And that I had a dream that I cheated on my boyfriend with like the UPS delivery guy.
And what does that mean?
And the next day, this UPS guy came and I couldn't even look at him because I was like, what if?
Oh my God.
What if I fall in love with this guy?
Oh my God.
I don't
God.
Know. Julie, I'm not a dream interpreter. That shit, I can't understand at all. But maybe that just means that on the subconscious that we have these different sexual curiosities. And it's not about the person we're hooking up with. It's just our brain is like, okay, well, in the subconscious, I'm not in a monogamous relationship, so I should go out and explore what it's like to be with other people.
Wow. So mine was before I was in a relationship, but it was with one of our past guests. I will not say who.
Oh, wait. Hold up.
And I was like, I woke
hold
up.
Hold up. No, 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 no. I'm not letting you get away.
I was horrified. No, 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 no. I can't say it. I can't say it. I was so horrified. No. I don't want to put it on air. Okay. It obviously means nothing, but it was just like one of those moments that I woke up and now everyone's going to be guessing, which is
okay. For
the fun
all
too.
Y'all listening, can you please just screenshot this right now and DM us or tag us on Instagram with your guess of who Julie hooked up with in her
dreams.
Who was a past guest? Was it in the recent seasons? Just give us that.
No, it's digging back a few. It was a weird dream, weird ass dream. And I woke up very disturbed. I'll just leave it at that. Anyways, let's move on.
Do you all see how Julie does this shit to me all the time? She'll be like, something happened, but I can't tell you anything. I'm just going to leave you hanging. It's going to drive me fucking
nuts. It's a cliffhanger.
I'm going to dream about it
tonight. That's the whole point, is to drive you away nuts. This is my whole master plan.
My dream will be about your dream tonight. Yeah. I'm putting that intention
is so meta.
In my head.
That is so meta.
Super meta. Last night I had a dream that I did something to my boyfriend. It wasn't sexual. We had a conversation. And then my second dream was that I told him about the dream I had.
And then you woke up in real life and you told the dream about the dream.
About the dream.
He's like, what the fuck?
He's like, please go away. Put away the vodka. It's too early.
Like,
go home. You're drunk.
I can't do this.
He's so like, funny. Can I just leave me alone?
Okay, well, let's go from the dreams to the present. Have you noticed something different about me, UA?
Your hair looks fantastic. I was going to say it earlier.
I have been dying for a haircut, like dying. Because, okay, people that don't live in California or maybe San Francisco more specific, you probably have had no issues getting a haircut. I have been hitting up my person for like 4 months now. And she's like, oh, yeah, I'll be back in May. I'll be back in June. I'll be back in July. And eventually I just went to someone else because I'm like, I can't anymore. Like, my hair is a freaking, like, crazy person today. So, yeah, I feel so much better.
What, did you dye it too?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, it looks great. I was going to say something earlier. Sorry,
well, it was pretty bad before. So, it was like, I was like, this is the longest I've been. So, yes, it is much improved. But I'm looking good. Not to toot my own horn, but I have a really good dinner tonight that I'm taking my boyfriend for his birthday to this, like, really nice restaurant that only has three tables, this place. And it's supposed to be, like, super creative, like, the food. Like, it's all a theme. I don't know. I'll have to report back after.
What's it called?
So the restaurant is called Merchant Roots. And they only have three tables.
What?
It was funny. I was like telling another friend about it. She's like, I'm convinced there's a drug operation. How would they survive off three tables?
That's what I'm saying.
Because it's like, it's not cheap by any means, but it's not like so expensive either. Like,
it's not $4,000
a
table.
No, it's not crazy expensive. It's like not that much more than like another restaurant. And, but it's like a tasting menu. They have like a theme. It's like a in bloom flower. So it's going to be like a lot of like.
I love it.
And I guess they like decorate the whole area. So I'm going to take a lot of photos and I'll tell you about it.
Please,
but I'm very excited.
Report
but back. The best part is I don't have to do my hair. And we're like getting dressed up, which is very exciting.
I love that. How fun. A romantic night out with the boo.
Yeah, we're also eating at 5:30 p.m. early bird.
Yeah,
special.
Okay, that's the part we probably should tell people. It's also an AARP restaurant.
Well, they only have two seatings because they only have three tables. So you basically had 5:30 and 8:30, and the only option was outdoors because the indoor was booked. So I'm like, maybe we should do 5:30 because it'll be warmer.
Yeah,
and we went back and forth. Should we do 8:30? Should we do because 8:30 is like a little late when you're outdoors in SF at least.
It's fine. You'll be there with Ethel and Bruce. You're in good company.
People listening are probably like, this sounded really cool, and now it sounds really fucking lame. Like, what happened?
See, I'm guessing this is one of those, like, multi-course
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's
things,
like
right?
eight courses. I, like, did not
if
eat much
If you are
today.
Starting at 8:30, you would be done
oh my
at
God,
midnight.
Yeah.
You don't
exactly.
want that.
Exactly. We're like, we want to go out and do stuff after.
Yeah. So you start at 5:30.
We're going to be out at 8:30. Is they, I mean, you'll definitely be done by 8 because they need to turn over
they
the
need
table.
The table.
Yeah.
That's true. But it's good because at least afterwards you can just like digest versus I hate going home from a full meal and then you go straight to bed.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking of. Exactly. So, okay, you're helping me re-justify the 5:30 time. This is exactly what was going through my mind at the beginning. But then I was like, did I make a mistake and should have booked 8:30? But
I'm still secretly judging just for fun because you won't tell me who you slept with in your dream. We're even now.
She's like, I need to bring it back to that. I'm not going to let this go.
Yeah. As soon as we stop recording, I'm like, who the fuck did you fuck? Who did you photo?
90%. Who did I photo? Photo in Florida. 90% sure I already told you, like, when the dream happened. Like, I think I woke up and texted you. So I'm like, 90% sure I'm not holding anything back from you. But anyways, I'm trying to just keep our listeners on their toes. That's really what my ulterior motive is. Maybe you need to do an Instagram poll, see what people respond with their guess.
I'm putting it up right now. Do you see? I'm just literally putting it up right now. If you had to guess who Julie is sleeping with,
this is how rumors get started with who I'm sleeping with as a past guest in my dream like 8 months ago.
Contrary to popular belief, Julie and I do not play that as a drinking game. Like, who would you fuck? Like, who's a past guest? We don't.
Maybe we
don't
should.
Look at our guests that Maybe we shouldn't tell people do that.
Maybe we shouldn't. UA's like, we never do this.
We never do this. Grab your tequila now.
Never.
Let's talk about it. Our subconscious is so fucking crazy, and I love it because it's the unfiltered side of you. So for anybody who works like in law, who works in education, you need to just listen to your dreams because that's like the wild side of who you are. The authentic side.
The authentic. Speaking of our subconscious filter, should we read this question that we got this week?
I want to read this question every morning when I wake up because it literally makes my day.
The best part is we usually try to keep them in theme, but we're like, you know what? We're just going to throw this question out today. It is not in the pride theme whatsoever, but maybe it is. You know, everyone, you can make it work for you.
We love you all for sending in sex questions because some of you think this is a sex podcast, which I personally take as a compliment.
Right. I learned that a couple weeks ago.
And these sex questions are just really good. But there's one in particular that we had to really call out because it's probably the best sex question we've gotten. Y'all ready for this? Okay. Whoever sent this in, we would love to know.
This is
someone
only
sent it in anonymously.
This is second to the dick pic we got once. That will always be the number one.
And that was not a question. It was a statement. She was like, I received a dick pic. I just want to share.
And also, I just want to clarify, it wasn't like a listener's dick. It was like a listener's date's dick. Like three dicks removed.
Three dicks. Aren't we all three dicks removed? Like, whoever you're dating, you're just like,
that is a deep question. That is a deep question.
I know a dick who knows a dick who knows this dick.
Six degrees of seven, Kevin Bacon.
And three dicks removed from anybody you date, man or woman. So here's the question. Anonymous question. No joke here. This person asks, is sex better with socks on? Okay.
No judgment. I'm trying not to judge the question. I'm laughing, but I'm no judgment.
Is sex better with socks on? Okay, but we wanted to validate this question because we were like, is this a joke? We really thought, is this a joke or is this a legitimate question? So we Googled it. It is like one of the most Google questions on
really
the interwebs, guys.
I have never thought about it either way. Have you ever, like, has it even crossed your minds?
Julie, it has crossed my mind when the guy I've slept with kept his socks on. I'm like, what the fuck? Why are your socks on? You are naked with socks on. That is very unattractive.
What if you're just what if you're just in the moment and you forget to take your socks off?
Okay, I'm pretty sure taking off your pants takes a lot more effort than taking your socks off. Come on, dude. This is like not cool.
I don't know. Maybe there's like a kink fetish of keeping your socks on. Like, you know, like sometimes it's like hotter when you like keep like a bra on. Maybe like keeping your socks on. I mean,
yes, a bra is sexy. Keeping your panties on, that's sexy. What if you got
like mesh, like
mesh socks? Nylon socks?
I'm still thinking, like, you know, like
nylon socks that you wear under loafers. Yeah. That's hot.
Like,
that is hot.
If, you know, it could be like the rainbow for Pride, you could go, like, you could celebrate all different things.
I would love to ask all my friends who are celebrating Pride if they would think rainbow socks would be so hot.
Glitter socks? What about glitter socks?
The only sexy socks I can think of are no socks. Okay.
Look, I don't care if you have socks or not. I'm not thinking of, like, it just wouldn't faze me either way. I don't think I'd even fucking notice. That's, like, first of all, like, it probably wouldn't even cross my mind. I mean,
why don't you try it out tonight and let me know if you notice or not. It's very noticeable to me. There's a freaking naked body with just socks on. That is very noticeable.
Maybe I'm not as observant as you.
You would also feel it.
That's true. I don't know. That could feel nice if they were like soft socks. Maybe this is a good thing.
Soft socks or like socks with like massaging beads.
I don't know. I mean, the fact that it's a very popular Google question, I feel like there's more than we're missing.
I do wonder if it's a functionality thing. Better grip, right?
Like grip like those socks, like with those like little like grippies at the bottom. You know,
yeah, like grip onto the back, grip onto the back of someone's calves. I don't know. It gives you better friction. Is it like, yeah, is it better grip? Is it like if you're cold and, you know, instead of like the heat escaping through your feet, now all the heat can go to your vagina and your genitals? Maybe there's something with that. I don't know. We need to do more research.
Yes. Before we move on, because I know we've hammered this topic in. No, I do want to just, like, I want to say, like, obviously someone wrote in this question. Obviously it's a Googled question. Like, let's just take maybe a second to think of, like, why this would be good. Like, why would someone want to do this? Can you think of anything outside of the grip idea that you had? Let's just assume it's normal socks.
Yeah, I mean, it could be one of those things where someone does have a foot fetish. So you're covering the one coveted bottom part. So it could be a little sexy. Or it's like a strip kind of thing, like keep the socks on until you're ready to strip it all off and then you're fully naked.
So it's like a game. Also,
I mean, maybe that could be a game, or you multi-purpose the socks, like take it off and use it as like, I don't know, blindfolds or handcuffs.
If someone took their like sweaty foot sock and put it on my eyes, like, no, that would do it for me. I don't care if they keep their socks on, but don't put it as a blindfold for me. Like, that's where I draw the line.
I will bet you $1 million if someone's into that. Foot stink in their eye. Someone's into it.
I think we've officially beat this topic to death. If you are into socks, if you are down with socks, please let us know. Maybe there's something obvious that we're missing. The only thing I could think of is it's like sometimes it gets cold at night and you want to like warm your feet. I don't know.
Right. But how does that make sex better? The question is sex better with socks? It's not like, are you warmer with socks? You
know? Well, if you're not cold, maybe it would make sex. I don't know. Now I'm like pulling. But anyways, let's move on to some announcements because I don't know how much more we can go.
I really hope we helped you with that, whoever sent that question in. I'm going to have to do some research.
I know. This one stumped us, guys. This one stumped us.
It really stumped. And very few questions stump us, but this one in particular. Nope. We're going to do some investigative research for that one. Okay, moving on.
Quick announcements. Well, definitely follow us on Instagram. We've been growing like crazy on Instagram. You obviously want to take this poll that's about to go out. So definitely.
Obviously.
If there's no better time to follow us on Instagram, it's right now. So at Dateable Podcast, you can find us there. We also put up really beautiful inspirational quotes. We have funny quotes. We have clips of our past guests. All sorts of fun things on Instagram.
Really selling it, Julie. I think people know what an Instagram account usually has. She's like, and then we have videos. And sometimes we have
sometimes
captions.
We put a photo of the two of us up there.
Sometimes we have reels.
Shit gets crazy on the IG.
Yeah, keeping you guys on your toes. Oh.
Anyways.
Socks. God. That should be our next post. It's just socks. Socks. That's it. Okay.
Then we'll know who really listens. That will be our true test. Our other announcement, you know, join Love in the Time of Corona. Eventually, we're going to have to change that name, but Love in the Time of Corona is our Facebook group. Love in the Time of Corona by the Dateable Podcast is what you search for. This is our public group. This is where some of the live streams happen. This is where you can, you know, connect to your fellow Dateables, the Dateable listeners. There's a lot of Dateable meetups happening lately. Freaking amazing. There was one in Philly the other week. Chicago is happening. DC rally. There was one at rally the other day.
Oh, was there? Wow. Yep. New York still happening.
New York's still happening.
Like regular ones.
Yep. There's all sorts. I mean, LA, a bunch have happened. There's also a bunch of people flying out to San Francisco to meet up from all over in September. So this is amazing. We love it. We love seeing you all connect with each other. And the way that people are connected is because they form deep bonds in the sounding board. That's really been the root of a lot of the people that are organizing these. A lot of these people have been each other's like COVID confidants. And, you know, like the confidants through this entire, like their entire dating process, really each other's sounding boards. So check out dateablepodcast.com/soundingboard if you kind of want to take things to the next level. We have a great community in there. And yeah, only good things to say about everyone in there.
Only good things.
Let's do a quick message from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Z-Man Games, an array of fun games for adults, one of which is called Love Letter. Now, in this card game, your goal is to win the heart of the noble princess who is looking for an ideal partner and confidant to help with her royal duties when she one day assumes the throne. Your goal is to enlist the characters in the castle to deliver your love letter while keeping other players' letters away. It's trickier than it sounds. Powerful cards lead to early gains but make you a target, and rely on weaker cards for too long and your letter may be tossed in the fire. I find it to be a fun and nice 20-minute mental break during the day. This 2-6 player card game fits in your pocket so you can take it with you anywhere. Love Letter is appropriate for ages 10 and up and is available for $11.99 through Z-Man Games. You can find it at Target, your local game store, or directly through Z-Man's web store. Confession, I have a secret about how I've been able to update my wardrobe with only high quality but affordable pieces these last few years. And now I have to let the secret out because they're sponsoring this episode. It's called Quince. Yeah, if you know, you know. Quince has premium European linen dresses, gorgeous washable silk tops, luxurious cashmere, and the best part, they're priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands because they partner directly with top factories. So no more middleman, and that's why it costs less to you. I know Julie got herself some nice cashmere pieces, and at only $50 a sweater, come on. And I recently ventured into home goods. I got myself some premium cotton percale sheets, ultra cooling, and just feels like a 5-star hotel every night. And it's so perfect for the upcoming hot months. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/dateable for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/dateable to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/dateable.
I am all about self-care these days, and guess what?
body care is also self-care. Taking care of your body is a moment to practice mindfulness, self-love, and compassion, all things that I am fully behind right now. That's why I'm so glad to share a promo from one of our new sponsors, Osea. I'm obsessed with their Mega Moisture Duo that provides instant firming hydration and delivers a full body glow. It makes me feel so confident and refreshed to walk out the door with unbelievably glowing skin. And there's nothing more I love than getting premium skincare products at an incredible value. So, show your skin some love with clean, vegan skin and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide and use the code DATEABLE at OseaMalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to OseaMalibu.com and use the code DATEABLE for 10% off.
Okay, so shall we turn it over to Ryan and Matt and all of our special guests to talk all about intersectionality and pride.
Happy Pride!
We are so excited to be here for our special live Pride edition.
Happy Pride, everyone. What are we doing here? We are celebrating Pride, but I think we also need to understand why we celebrate Pride and why it's important for us to understand the history of Pride. And we are leaving it up to people who are part of the LGBTQ plus community to talk about their own experiences and really enlighten us with the things that we probably don't understand. Like as straight heteronormative women that we are, I'm just speaking for Julie and I, there's a whole other community that we are not part of, but we want to understand even more. And that's why we want to celebrate this community. And we want to celebrate all of our listeners who are part of the LGBTQ plus community.
Exactly. And we are so honored that we have Ryan and Matt who are going to be leading the charge on the live stream. But we also have a ton of special guests from the community. So everyone can hear a bunch of folks' unique experiences and stories. And the goal of this is really to like understand why do we celebrate Pride and become the allies that we all can be and support each other, because that's what dateable really means.
So shall we bring on our dateable couple?
Let's do it. All right. Right. Yes, we have a dateable couple. So who better to lead the charge here? Without further ado, let's turn it over to Matt and Ryan.
Yay. Here they
and
come.
And here they are.
Hi. Hey. All right. Well, thank you all so much for joining us for this special live broadcast of our Pride coverage here. Basically, we really wanted to, when Julie and UA asked me if I'd be willing to do something like this, obviously my response was yes, but always a yes, but. And then I went and talked to Matt. She asked if Matt would like to join for it as well. And the first thing that Matt said to me was,
as long as you make it intersectional.
Yeah. So that was kind of a big thing. We really wanted to make sure that we had a broad scope of people that we were able to join, speak their different intersectionalities, and really kind of bring some of that openness that we really have in the LGBTQ plus community to the table here. So really, it's about shared experiences, understanding one another, and how not just from outside of the community, but even within the community, we can do more in our allyship to each other. Because ultimately, civil rights fights are not just for one aspect of that LGBTQ plus community. Throughout the history of it, it's really been, you know, so much crossovers. It's really a constant fight for what we can all have equality together for eventually. So, and that comes through that understanding of each other's intersectionality. So the first thing we really wanted to cover on it was a little bit of LGBTQ plus history. And unfortunately, it is a little bit skewed towards American history on that. So sorry to some of our international friends here. But the big thing that we really wanted to touch on here is how LGBTQ plus history is not usually just isolated to fighting for our rights. It's usually coupled with civil rights fights.
In general. Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of just start by touching on women's suffrage and women's activism in the U.S., which is really kind of a big part of LGBTQ plus history that's overlooked. A lot of the active members of the women's rights movements were actually members of the lesbian community or the genderqueer community, women who slept with women. And that is kind of a big portion of where their fight for independence or liberation from men, you know, having autonomy for themselves came from. I mean, yes, it was a lot of housewives as well. It was a lot of married women wanting to be represented as well. But there were a lot of leading members of that movement that were part of the lesbian community. So one of those big members was Jane Addams. A lot of people are really familiar with this person. She founded the Hull House, which actually housed a lot of immigrants from all over the world. That actually brought her in with a lot of communities. So she really kind of was a driving force for this women's rights movement. She was someone who constantly fought not just for women's rights, but all women's rights. The women's rights movement actually had a tendency to sometimes skewed towards just white women. After the passing of the 15th Amendment, they were left out of right to vote during that. So they really re-geared towards that and kept it as an inclusive thing so that when women's suffrage 19th Amendment passed in 1920, they were able to make sure that it was for all women, not just specific women. Moving into Stonewall, things a little more current, we've had a lot of problems with Hollywood representing it as a bit of a whitewash, even a large backlash towards I believe it was 2015 film, because most of the characters were represented as white men, cisgendered men. However, a lot of the characters that were active in that actual historic event were a lot of Black trans women and a lot of trans men and women just in general, genderqueer women and men. So it was unfairly represented in that historical recanting of it. Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia Rivera, members like that were just not shown for the characters that they were. And these are people who went on fighting for LGBTQ plus rights after that. So it's interesting that that's an odd thing that we're not seeing with history.
Right. And of course, the first Pride Parade was the year after Stonewall and every year after that on June 29th to commemorate the anniversary of Stonewall to spearhead gay liberation. And I think it's interesting how pretty much throughout history, Pride events have taken on a different fight in each portion of history. So in 1970, you had the celebration of Stonewall, gay liberation, basically being able to be seen in public, be gay, repealing of sodomy laws that in some states were still around. And then throughout the 80s and early 90s, you had a turn towards addressing the HIV/AIDS epidemic, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit later.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in the 1990s to 2000s, it was all about marriage. And now that we have that passed, we're starting to be better about being intersectional, about really focusing on the members of our community who need the most attention, who are the most structurally marginalized groups. So Pride every year takes on a different meaning, but still links back to the history that we have throughout history, pretty much.
Right. And so that was kind of the big thing, even with like women's rights movement, with members like Jane Addams and other members of that community, they set aside lesbian rights and coupled it in with just women's rights in general and women's autonomy in general. And then we have current day things such as like the Black Lives Matter movement. I think Pride last year really took a shift to try and help support a lot of the Black members of the community because it was such a pivotal time for us to step forward and do that. And that's why it's so key in LGBT history, because it's not just one person's fight. It's such a wide arcing rainbow that we're all included under. And it's such a key thing for us to really keep focusing on that intersectionality, learning about each other and understanding each other so that we can all work together towards that common goal. So that brings us probably into our first guest here, which is going to be Brian. Everybody knows him and loves him as the most dateable. So I think now would be a great time to go ahead and bring him on in.
Hello, everyone.
Ryan. Hey, Brian. How's it going? So something that we didn't do when we first started was, and we're going to do this all the way throughout, is we're going to really kind of allow everyone to represent themselves the way that they want to freely represent themselves here. It is a safe and comfortable space. So as everyone knows, I'm Ryan. Hi, I identify as he, him, and I am a cisgendered gay male.
Matt, my pronouns are he, him, and I am also a cisgendered gay male.
Okay, and we've now welcomed in Brian. I'm going to hand the floor over to you to speak freely.
Thank you, Ryan, Matt, and also thank you for organizing this. This is an amazing thing that we're doing, and it's great recognition, I think, for the queer people in the Dateable community who are listening and, you know, want to hear more voices as well. My name is Brian. For those of you who don't know, I am a cis gay man, and I use he, him pronouns as well. Yeah, I wanted to just talk a little bit about kind of what Pride means to me and kind of where I'm at with my journey. I talked a little bit about this in my episode on healing your dating wounds, but for me, Pride really means a time to celebrate us. As queer people, we don't always have the permission, unfortunately, to celebrate us. And Pride is the one time of the year that we are kind of given that. It's a time to acknowledge the progress we've made, and specifically all the fighting that past generations have done so that we can have the rights and freedoms we have today. It's also a time to reflect on what our generation needs to do in order to keep pushing the agenda so that future generations can continue to have even more freedoms and rights as the movement moves on. For me, understanding what Pride is and what it means to me has been a slow journey. I was raised in the Catholic Church in a very conservative part of the U.S., as many have been.
Yeah. And
in that kind of background, you don't hear the most positive messages. Gay was synonymous with cancer. It was synonymous with sin, immoral. A lot of things, messages were given to me at a young age that really impacted not just how I viewed queer people, but how I really viewed myself. And this was also further impacted. I'm a parent of an immigrant, so there's a lot of expectation around specifically being a man and what that means with carrying on family traditions, carrying on family names. And so there was a lot of, I guess you could say, walls into my coming out process. And while it's easy to sort of focus on those things as derogatory, in a lot of ways, it did help me come to understand who it is I eventually want to become. So you'll hear this kind of talked about a lot in queer spaces, but there's often this journey of how do we become our authentic self? Because we spend so much time in our youth being someone else, because that's what we kind of have to do to pass. But it's not usually until we're adults, and usually as well until we have a little bit of therapy, that we really understand what it means to live as an authentic self. And really, I just wanted to lay that out as a little bit of my journey. Yeah. And specifically kind of talk a bit about where I'm at now, which is with what it means to be an ally. And I think oftentimes with allyship, it's a bit of a buzzword. It's thrown around in politics. It's thrown around on social media. But those who aren't really in the advocacy space probably don't know too much about allyship. When I first started really meeting other people in the community, not just gay people, but also bisexual people, pansexual people, and even more recently, trans and non-binary people. It was a process. It is a process. And for me, allyship really means being willing to learn, being willing to listen, and being willing to take a step back and show up for others. So even as queer people, we don't always know everything. We have to do our own education ourselves. And I think that's something that I would really like to hit home on is a lot of people listening to this are going to be straight. And you may be wondering, well, how can I show up for my queer friends, my gay friends, my lesbian friends, my trans friends? Showing up for me really means being authentic and trying to make that connection. So it's really easy, for instance, to make a post or to like a status. But I would actually challenge people to go a little further than that. Strike up a conversation with someone who maybe is someone you wouldn't normally talk to. Try to see things from someone else's point of view. Maybe go to a listening forum at your university and learn about a topic that you're not familiar with that has to do with queer history or the queer experience. There are a lot of ways you can put yourself out there and show up for others in queer spaces and non-queer spaces. And I think that really is the first step to true, authentic allyship. And that's something I wanted to communicate.
Yeah, that's super beautiful. And honestly, it's really interesting that you noted on kind of like the self-loathing that's instilled within, you know, being raised Catholic, because I definitely felt that myself. And even, you know, like you said, struggling with self-identity for the longest time, I can remember, you know, my parents even saying like, oh, do you have a crush on this girl? You know, whatever. And like, of course, then you know, you're not even really sure of what's happening. So yeah, sure. Yeah, I've got a crush on that girl or whatever, you know, and you struggle with that so long that like it is kind of, that's the new thing, is like trying to really find your place and your belonging, right? So I think it's great that you're making that challenge, because it's honestly really one of the biggest things that a lot of people can do is helping, making people feel welcome in that space, allowing their friends and their family, whoever they are, to really kind of feel safe and okay to be that person through that self-identity, and encouraging to understand that person more. It's really awesome. So yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that bit with us, Brian. And I think that that's great advice as well.
So I actually have a question for you, Brian, to just kind of keep it moving. So you talked about being your authentic self. And I think that's a really important part of being a member of this community, is really trying to find who you are. There are so many different facets. You mentioned therapy as somewhat of a joke, but what steps have you taken to really come to terms with your own identity or your own sexuality? If there's any listeners that are in the closet or, you know, struggling to figure themselves out, what would you recommend for them?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and also a very big question to answer.
in a short, compact.
Yes, yes. It's interesting because my answer would change if I was a much younger person versus someone where I'm kind of at in my life stage now. For me, it's been a long process. So when I first came out, I was met with both kind of acceptance, but then a lot of not acceptance. My journey with acceptance really came back to my journey with myself. So I think when we throw on acceptance, people generally think, oh, I need to come out to other people. I need other people to accept me. And that's really more of the surface value of it. While coming out to other people is an important step, learning to come out to yourself, learning to be comfortable in your own skin, learning to challenge the derogatory negative things society and people have told you about yourself, and really understand this internal battle that you've been fighting for so long. That's where the real work happens.
Yeah, totally.
It definitely does. well, yeah, I mean, I think that that's a really amazing thing to suggest to people. And I think it really is just opening the floor for that communication to happen and allowing people to feel comfortable for that. So that is a really great thing to present. I will go ahead and allow for us to open up for our next guest. Brian, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your experiences with us. It was really a privilege to have you on.
Thanks.
So our next guest is actually somebody who has been on the podcast before. Also, a quick plug for Brian. If you haven't checked out his episode, he did have an episode this season. Go check that out. It's really great. He talks on mental health and it's amazing. Our next guest is actually somebody who talks about something that Matt has kind of talked about at length in speech and debate, because Matt did a lot of that in college.
I did. He's going to touch on kind of the intersectionality between race and the LGBT community. They haven't always had the best relationship. A perfect example is Bayard Rustin, who organized the March on Washington for MLK, but was largely cast out of the gay rights movement due to his sexuality. And then on the same side, you see a lot of racism by white gay men expressed to other races in our community, unfortunately. And so our next speaker has a lot of experience and actually did a whole episode on it, I believe. Mm-hmm. So,
yep. So let's go ahead and bring Chris in. Hey, Chris.
Hey. How's it going?
Looking good. Liking the Pride tank. Very nice. Colorful.
Target Pride collection.
Yeah.
Him too.
Nice. I got those rainbow ice cream cones on. You know, we're sporting it. Rainbow colors here. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I would love to go ahead and hand it over for you to let everyone know how you self-identify.
Yeah, great. So yeah, and thanks so much for organizing this and leading this discussion. This is a super important discussion to have. Yeah, well, my name's Chris. I'm a gay male, preferred pronouns he, him. And as with, you know, with Brian and Ryan and Matt, I also love celebrating Pride. I think it's super important, especially having come from a religious background as well, to be able to live life authentically and out loud and let people see that you can be a gay man and also the other things, you know. So it's really, really great to celebrate Pride every year. But my celebration of Pride has always been complicated by the fact that there, as within society as a whole, there's deep-seated racism and systemic biases in the gay community. And it sort of reflects in interesting ways. So as I discussed in my podcast episode, gay men often are very frank about their sexual preferences. You know, you go on Grindr or Scruff or any of the many apps, and you're just barraged with all these, oh, I like this and know this and know that. And so there's a lot of, you know, femphobia. There are a lot of preferences that are thrown around. But one of them that was usually seen as okay is preferences based off of race. And people tend not to call that racism. They call that preferences. I've seen profiles that even went to so far as to say squinty eye, no reply, talking about Asian men, you know, really, really terrible stuff. No blacks, no femmes, no Asians was also a refrain that you would hear a lot on Grindr. And in having conversations with people about these, oftentimes it's not completely clear to people why those preferences might not be great. The place where systemic racism comes from in the U.S., it's based off of stereotypes. It's based off of not knowing the people that you have ill will towards. All of those really conspire in sex and dating as well. So for the same reason that a police officer might be threatened by a black man that's holding a cell phone and thinks it's a gun, or the same reason why a bank might say that a black family isn't as ready for a mortgage as, say, a white family of the similar qualifications are, that can also extend to dating, in which, you know, a person of a certain race might not be worthy of love or suitable as a partner. And all of those really, really come from the same place. So as a part of Pride, I like to personally reevaluate my own sexual preferences, and I encourage others to do the same and really interrogate what those actually mean and where they actually might come from. And one really easy thing to do, and I like to tell people, is to diversify even just your friend groups, because it's really hard not to see the humanity in others when you get to know them on an intimate level. And the easiest way to do that is to make more friends. So, right. Yeah, I think an important part of allyship during Pride is to evaluate these prejudices in the gay community and really interrogate them and try to change them.
Yeah, that's amazing. And honestly, I really think that the incredible part about that is that you're not saying just like that somebody needs to be willing to like sit at the table, because, you know, it's always fine for us to sit at the table. It's somebody has to be willing to come to the table in the first place. So be willing to come to the table and then sit with that person and really get to understand them and feel them out, so that you bring that humanity to that person as well, and start seeing more of the similarities instead of the otherness is really the big thing. Because at the end of the day, we are all people.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't matter. It's more about the value of that person's integrity than it is, you know, the shape or color of their skin or anything, really.
Yeah.
And while this is a specific problem in the gay community, I think, I don't know why gay white men have like some higher privilege in our community to be so vocal about those things in the way that sometimes straight people aren't, at least on dating apps. But one of the solutions I offered when I did a speech about this was looking at your Tinder matches. Are they proportionally representative of the population that you're swiping against? And if they're not, I think you brought this point up, like you really kind of have to ask yourself why and where the root of potentially even your subconscious comes from when, you know, picking potential partners.
Yeah, so I've done that, and I'm, you know, definitely I'm not high and mighty here. I scroll through white, and there's something going on there, and all of these forces that are operating on us that, you know, we'll see movies with, you know, two white romantic leads, and we see that over and over and over and over and over again. And we'll see TV shows in which, you know, a strong white guy is shown as, you know, the ultimate love interest. adventurous, the ultimate catch. All of that has to you know, go somewhere, and it manifests itself in our own different preferences. So it's even people of color, I think, including me. We have to look at these preferences.
Yeah, that's really, really a great point. And honestly, thank you so much for bringing that to the table for us. And thank you for offering your experiences as well. I mean, it's really, honestly, just great to have you on and share with us. Thank you for your vulnerability.
No, thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us, Chris. We'll go ahead and start heading over to our next guest here. This guest actually came to us as a referral from Brian. He is a friend of Brian's. They are a friend of Brian's. I apologize. The guest that I'd like to bring in is Jorge. Hi, Jorge.
Hello. How are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. How are you doing this evening?
Hello, I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. Happy Pride and happy Hump Day.
Yeah. Yes, we are nearing the weekend and it's so close. thank you for coming on with us. It's really important to have you here. I am so thrilled that we get to have you talk. You sent me this amazing message. I kind of asked you for a bit of your self-identity, and I got this whole like interesting wall, and I was like, this is a very dynamic person. This person has so much going on in their life. So please go ahead and take the floor and feel free to let us know how you self-identify and tell us about yourself.
Well, my name is Jorge, and I use the pronouns they, them, they, there, and as an alternative, I prefer no pronouns, and worst comes to worst, I have gone by he, him, his. And I'm a genderqueer person and also an immigrant. My official visa status is legal alien, which is kind of like a funny way of labeling us. And I am a taxpayer, just in case that the IRS is tuning in and listening to this. Important PSA. Yeah, for me, just being, I guess, like understanding myself as always kind of outside of, or having my identity be always understood nearly as an opposition to some of the mainstream, I've always kind of faced some of some pushback and suspicion and doubt, even 5 years when I started to understand myself as not a man, as a result of the research that I was doing and explored. I started this whole journey of self-discovery that really has spanned several years and still goes on, right? Because this is kind of like an ongoing thing for many queer people. And I feel like the first time that I've experienced a little bit of that doubt and suspicion was through dating and not really understanding what it is that identifying yourself outside of the binary entails, and receiving comments such as you don't really know yourself, or you're going to understand yourself in a couple of years, or you just want attention, or you're confused and don't really know who you are, which have all been kind of like invalidating comments that have oftentimes happened from people within the community and people that either I was dating and sometimes even at work. However, during that journey, I oftentimes had to come back to myself and really get reunited with that first motivation to even say out loud that I don't identify as a man, and start interrogating what does that mean for me. Of course, just with like all, many queer people, I feel like I have a membership for therapy, and although I deliver it too, it's just very much of a necessity in coping with all of these kind of pushbacks and these power structures that you need to understand yourself, and you need to kind of like find a stable ground to stand on in reaction to, in response to all of these kind of like, to all this questioning from the mainstream. So that was kind of my journey of getting to really be myself without the pressure of proving my identity to others, and also starting to define for myself, what does that look like? And then also making the negotiations, as I also tend to say, that our identity is sometimes a negotiation that we have with the world. And it can come as a result of what is the status of safety that we have? What is the support system that we have around us? So for many queer people, the coming out process will really be a privilege and something that is not something everyone can access. So with that, even with Pride and celebrating all of our diverse colors, I feel like the message can be too that we have patience with people who are still building those support systems and building those resources around them to create a kind of a nest where they feel comfortable in, you know, blossoming into their wonderful peacock or whatever other type of bird they are. and it's for me also kind of like understanding that oftentimes I've had to pass during my time, even as an immigrant, I feel like I oftentimes come across as American, and even that was done understanding the biases that people oftentimes have and how to get ahead. Like oftentimes from queer community and people beyond the queer community, I've experienced kind of questioning on why I'm in the U.S. and whether I'm coming here to steal resources or come for jobs that are not made for me. And moving to the U.S. at the time of Trump, right after Obama, to make this political or anything, I feel like just by my appearance, my political ideology is obvious, but I did experience difficulty in trying to also pass in ways that will make me seem more legitimate and professional. And I feel that that kind of those threads of competence and professionalism and passing and ability have often come up in those two identities, because people will question you if you do not either fit in visually or in your behavior with the rest of the crowd. So I would like to remind also people that during time of Pride, we can also question how can we create spaces together with allies where we don't need passing and we don't need strategic passing, and people kind of like activating their identity at times when they feel comfortable and safe, and then passing with whatever is normative at the time. So inviting allies to help us create those spaces, and so that we have less pushback on how we identify and how we present in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I love what you said about like having the sense of security as well to have that space and to have that ability to be comfortable in their identity. It's really about like really trying to maintain that atmosphere where we don't have to feel like coming out is even really a thing anymore. I think that that's kind of the end game, right? Is that like, if we are all so understanding and accepting of everyone, it's just like, well, this is how this person chooses to identify, and this is how their identity is true to them. Like, then that is for them, and that has nothing to do with me, and that's a beautiful thing. And just accepting people as they come to us.
I think that's interesting. We talked about the privilege of being able to come out, but then in response to you, there's also a privilege with this future state worldview of not being able or not coming out at all, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, even like with my family, my expectation is I would show up with a guy and no one would bat an eye. But there's an intense amount of privilege in knowing that I would be safe, and if my parents cut me off, I'm financially stable and don't have to worry about what they would think. So it's interesting, like even when you think of like the stereotypical gay agenda, what we want to get to right now in the status quo, so many of those things necessitate a level of privilege that
exactly
most people don't have access to.
And that's what I always tell everyone too, is that I had the privilege when I was coming out that I was able to tell my parents like, hey, this is what I know about me, and this is what I'm telling you now so that you know that as well. And I was able to be accepted by my family. I didn't have to worry about, you know, losing my sense of home, losing my stability when that happened. And like, that's just not the privilege that so many people have. So letting people know also in your immediate surrounding, friends, family, whoever they are, that like they have that security with you can be such a hugely impactful thing on their life. And I think that that's such a great thing that you really touched on.
Yeah. For many people, it's going to take some time to get there, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Well, that was a really amazing thing to bring to the table for us. And again, we appreciate the beautiful part of the rainbow that you've brought to us today. So thank you for giving us your time. It was really amazing having you with us.
Thank you for having me, and happy Pride.
Happy Pride.
Okay. So our next guest that's going to be with us here is going to be Victoria. And Victoria came to me a little bit last moment, but we're going to bring her in to talk about some of her experiences. So if we can go ahead and bring Victoria in. Hi, Victoria.
Hi, Victoria. I am identified as she, her. I am a heteroromantic asexual person, woman, lady. and if you want to get in more into detail, there in within the ace community, there's different ways to describe your like attitude to sex or like and whatever. So there ranges from sex favorable, sex neutral to sex repulsed. I'm sex neutral, which means that I can take it or leave it. I will do it for like my partners, but it's not like something I want really or crave, but it's not something I like hate either. So there's a bunch of like different ways to describe that, and I guess I go with sex neutral. I guess so about like intersectionality and like my identities, I'm Asian, I'm Chinese, I'm also ace. And I guess like it's a really interesting intersectionality because being Asian, there's like two parts to it. One of them is like growing up, aceness felt like the norm because you're like, oh yeah, you're supposed to like not be interested in dating. And then when you're just dating, you're supposed to just date and sex is not on the table. And I'm like, great.
Right.
I don't understand why this is a concern. Like, this makes sense.
Right. This is normal for me.
Yeah. And then this is I'm heteroromantic, which means that I like guys. So like I like kissing guys and like hugging guys. And I have crushes. Not really. I don't know. I guess ace crushes are a little bit different from like normal people crushes. But like not normal people, but like allosexual people crushes. But anyway, there's that. And then on the other side, you know, there's like as an Asian woman, you're like, oh yeah, like yellow fever. Like everyone's like, oh, I want to try it Asian. Which is gross. Please never try that or think about that. It's really nasty. And we are not your like, you know, your like toy or whatever. So yeah, there's those two things about being Asian. And then on the ace side, there's a lot of stuff there. So there's like, it's really interesting. So the bonus biggest thing is that there's like underrepresentation because there's a lack of exposure. Because it's like, because most ace people also tend to have a romantic orientation, you're like, oh yeah, I'm like just like everyone else. Like I'm either like, you know, straight because I like guys, or like straight, or like, you know, gay or bi or whatever. But the thing is, there's actually like a different dichotomy between romantic orientation and sexual orientation. And so just because you like one gender doesn't mean that your sexual orientation is the same. And you can illustrate this even more extreme example, there are people who are like, you know, homoromantic heterosexual or heteroromantic homosexual, in which case that's like really split, and they like, I guess they probably identify as like bi, but that's even more complicated. But yeah, there's that. So then there's that. So there's a lot of people who don't know. So a good example of this is that a lot of my closest friends and the people I've dated are somewhere in the ace spectrum. There's gray sexuality, which means you like are sexually attracted once at a blue moon, maybe like once every 5 years, once every 10 years. You know, it really depends how you want to identify with the label. There's demisexual, which seems to be somewhat common, which is basically that you only get sexually attracted to someone after you've known them, or like not known them, but like really emotionally connected with them. Imagine basically like no one turned you on until you have been your boyfriend for like, you know, 6 months or something like that is basically demisexual. Or you've like had this friend that you've known for like 2 years and like you're sexually attracted to that friend, but you're not sexually attracted to like your friend that you've known for like 1 month. That's like just example. So it's just that there's a lot of different ways to do it. I have some really close friends who's demisexual. My boyfriend is demisexual, and he didn't know this until I told him that I was ace, and I told him to look up what it was. And then we were talking about it, and he was like, by the way, I think I'm demi, and I'm like, okay, this is really helpful.
This makes a lot more sense. Okay, we can play with this now. We know where to go with this now.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like suspected because I'm like, you don't seem to be approaching this like the average dude. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But I think that there's also a lot of people like while dating that they have a lot of questions about it. So I usually like to have the person get to know me first before they, you know, start making assumptions about like what I do or what I don't do, or like whether it means I'm a prude or like whatever, you know. There's been different ways this has manifested. One of them has been like back in college, I was like, flirting does not come naturally to me, because I'm like, I'm not a flirty person. I'm just like, I'm your friend, or like, I'm just gonna hang out with you. Like, I'm like, I like you because you're like a cool friend and I want to, like, you know, whatever. But then like, or right. Like, then they'll be like, oh yeah, you're like, you're just like a friend to me. And I'm like, oh. And I've also figured out apparently my mistake was that I didn't know how to flirt, because that doesn't come naturally to me. But I mean, that's not something that all these people have. Like, this is just exclusive, I guess. Like, this is just a problem I have personally, or something I've seen personally. There's also erasure within the LGBT, sorry, erasure in general, but I've noticed it especially prevalent via the LGBT, in the LGBT community, which is kind of sad. So erasure is basically saying like, oh, you're a snowflake, stop giving like titles for things that no one cares about, you don't fuck, like you're not experiencing any oppression. But no, this is legitimately, there's like struggles that ace people have, like being medically diagnosed as like, why don't you have a sex drive? Like, libido is different from attraction, because people can, I don't know, there's a lot of memes about this. They're like, you know, like the dog that's like, It's like horny. No, who? Just horny. That's basically like how some people experience it. So like, there's a lot of different things. And then like, I don't know, this erasure about like the pride movement is for people like who can love who they love. No one's gonna judge you for not loving like anybody. Like, you know, but there's a lot of other things. Like, I think like in some places they won't rent to like friends. They'll only rent to couples, and I think that's like part of it. And there's like the medical thing. There's a bunch of like different things that. I luckily haven't had this struggle of dealing with, but I know that other people in the community have. So there's that. So I guess that's like a brief overview of like the main things. To be a good ally, I think the biggest thing is enthusiastic consent is extra important. Not like, you can't generalize and say like an ace will or won't fuck you, but like a lot of them I think that like they have to want to be willing to do it, whatever reason it is. And like, I think a lot of times what happens is they try to like peer pressure you and say like, hey, we've been dating for 3 months, why won't you fuck me? And I'm like, I don't want to. Like, nothing against you, but I don't want to. And then like, you know, stuff like that. So enthusiasm, important consent is extra important. And like, and then also communication of preferences and expectations. So like, if you know upfront that you're like not really a sexual person, you can say like, sex is not a big thing for me, and like, I don't like people who pressure me into it. Stuff like that is really important, and like, talking about that is really important and really helpful. And then another note I have is, there's also another thing that I am not, a lot of people, other people have, is called aromantic, which is basically they don't like anybody. They're just friends with people. And that could come in different forms. There are aromantic sexual people, and there's aromantic asexual people. And they have their own struggles, and I can't speak about them because I'm not one of them. But that is another thing to consider.
No, that's amazing. And that's actually part of the reason why we wanted to really offer the floor to everyone and not really make this just like a banter back and forth for the most part, but really to allow you to speak your truth on things, is because mm-hmm. we wanted to have that representation. We did not want to try and speak for anyone else and put words in other people's mouths. Mm-hmm. So I think that's amazing that you even touched on that about aromantics. Mm-hmm. You know, you said, I don't identify as aromantic, so I can't mm-hmm. speak to it. And that's why it's been so key having people like you on here, Victoria, because mm-hmm. you really touched on a lot of brilliant things that none of our other guests were able to do so. Mm-hmm. And I can't do that. So thank you so much for sharing those really intimate parts of how, you know, you love and how you date. And mm-hmm. it's really amazing for you to bring that to us.
Yeah, there's like a thing I saw before that was like, you can have love without sex, you can have sex without love, you could have, you know, there's different ways to do it. There's like, you know, all the different ways to love. So it's like, even aromantic people who have, I guess, love in their own way, it's like friend love. So one other thing worth mentioning, there's something called a queer platonic relationship, which is basically, what I think about it is kind of like, you know, back in when you were in like school and you had your best friend, like best friend forever for life, specifically like that one person you have like forever for life. That's basically, I think, the essence of like a queer platonic partner. It's like someone, it's common for ace people, it's also common for aromantic people, but basically it's like one person you pick to like share your life with, and it's usually like a you know, basically set her like a best friend. You'd live with them and you like be each other's like emergency contact. You might like, you know, even choose to raise children together. There's a lot of different ways to do it, but that's another thing. So that's also another valid form of relationship that I think is not commonly discussed.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing so much terminology. I'm just going to read some of the chat comments here because we have them. But I mean, UA said so many new terms I wasn't aware of. Julie chimed in as well and said, yes, I learned so much from you, Victoria. You know, we're really just really happy to have so many of these. It looks like Julie also said you can have sex without love and love without sex. It's really amazing quote. It really is, you know, just a fantastic thing. So again, thank you for bringing so much to the table for us. I know you had such a limited amount of time, so thank you for really, I love it. I love it. It's so great. Well, thank you. This is why I was so happy to have you on when you messaged us, and I'm really glad we were able to get you in. So thank you for making time for us, Victoria.
Thank you for having me. And feel free to message me if you have any questions.
I definitely will. Thank you so much.
Happy Pride.
Happy Pride.
Our next guest is one of the community members as well. So I'm going to go ahead and bring that guest on now. It is Amy. Everyone knows Amy, hopefully. Hi, Amy.
Hi, everybody. So I'm Amy. I'm a white cisgender woman. I go by she and her. And I am also bisexual. So here to bring that part of the rainbow. So there's a few kind of particular challenges with being bi. There's a lot of challenges that I think we've already seen a lot of people share who are under the pride flag, and there's some kind of unique things to being bi and some that are, I don't know, shared with a lot of other things. But hopefully if people are still tuned in, if you might learn a little bit of something to help you to be a better ally, but also maybe you might learn something that can help you be a better partner to either a current or future bi partner that you might have. So one of the things I want to bring up is erasure, which Victoria already gave a beautiful intro to and covered fairly well. But basically, representation matters. And the world, I think, is becoming, or at least, I don't know, Western culture, I should say, is becoming more embracing of the fact that there's not just straight people. Like, straight, I think, is still the default in a lot of media that we consume. But it's opening up. But one of the things that I see a lot is that it's, okay, now there's straight or there's gay. Yeah. You can be one of those two. Those are great. You can be those two things. And that's really, really limiting, which is also something that I think we heard in what Victoria was saying. There are a lot of options. There's a lot of ways to be. There's a lot of ways to love. There's a lot of ways to just live in the world and experience relationships with other people. And it's kind of interesting how many options aren't really represented. And bisexuality is definitely one of them. Something, a scene that I see frequently in movies and TV shows is there'll be a heterosexual couple that goes somewhere. And for whatever reason, the guy goes off to like go get them drinks or something. And then he looks over and sees his girlfriend is chatting with some guy. And he gets all jealous and upset, which we at Dateable know that that's probably not the sign of a healthy relationship. But we'll move past that. He goes over and the guy who was chatting up his girlfriend goes, oh, no, there's a misunderstanding here. Let me introduce my boyfriend. And then that's it. That's all that's said. Everyone goes, oh, ha, ha, ha. What a funny thing. Obviously a misunderstanding. He has a boyfriend. He's obviously gay. He's not hitting on the girlfriend.
He might be. He could be. Yeah.
Maybe he's opening up to a thruple.
Yeah. So, you know, don't make assumptions. You never know what's going on.
Also, totally not advocating for further jealousy either.
But someone, if there's a man with a boyfriend, he might be gay, he might be bisexual. If there's a man with a girlfriend, he might be straight, he might be bisexual. Like, if I'm dating a man, I'm still bisexual. If I'm dating a woman, I'm still bisexual. If I'm dating someone who's non-binary or genderqueer or anything else, I'm still bisexual. And that's still a really important part of my identity. And it's something that I didn't realize was part of my identity for a really long time, just because it's not really presented as an option. I was in my 30s by the time I really kind of came to terms with the fact that I'm bisexual, and that was such a freeing thing and just kind of opened up a big part of my life. I was in a relationship at the time and still wasn't gonna like go outside of that relationship. We were not monogamous and I was happy with that. But just knowing that about myself was really freeing. And it took me a really long time just because the default is heterosexual. From the time I was a kid, I knew I was attracted to guys. So I just figured that's what I was. And now it's really nice to know that, I don't know, there's more out there, I guess. There's another aspect of myself that I get to explore. So yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of options for ways to be. I kind of want to highlight that. Victoria was saying that a lot as well, that we really kind of narrow ourselves down, and there's pros and cons to the labels that we give ourselves. And some of the pros are that, you know, the queer community can be a really incredible place where people talk about a lot of things that a lot of straight people don't really talk about, investigate and are curious and are open to things. And so those labels can help you find community, other people who are experiencing things the same way that you are or in a similar way to what you are. But they can also be a little limiting. And I think that there's also a resistance to, you know, it was kind of weird to come out in my 30s. Like everyone I know, a lot of the people in my life have been there for a long time, and it's kind of weird for them to say, okay, well, this was how I always thought of you, but there's something different there now. But I think that as we learn more about ourselves, and there might be a lot of people, hopefully a lot of people going and investigating some of these words and terms and things that we've been throwing out there today.
Yeah, a lot of information.
Yeah. Learning some more about yourself. Like maybe you never thought about whether your romantic attraction is the same as your sexual attraction. Like that's an interesting thing to explore. And, you know, people might be learning more about themselves or more about their partners or other people or whatever. You know, just don't be afraid to embrace that or try it, or, you know, you can be straight one day and then have a realization about yourself and then, you know, be bisexual the next day or whatever else, you know. Life is a process of growing and learning, and this is an area that isn't an exception to that. To kind of sum up that point, just remember that bisexuals exist. It's important because we might be hitting on your girlfriends. But for this next thing, we're probably not hitting on your girlfriends. Kind of the pushback that I get most about being bi, if I'm dating someone and I, you know, mention that I'm bi or bring up to them, make sure that they know. There's a couple of main reactions that I get. And one of them is wild insecurity about, oh my gosh, you're bisexual. I don't think I can satisfy you because I'm only, you know, what I am, and you want everything. You want more than that. That's a pretty big assumption to make. And I'm not going to speak for all bisexuals. There's a spectrum. And people experience it in different ways. But generally speaking, most bisexual people or pansexuals are not walking around horny for absolutely everybody that they meet. Just like if you're straight or you're gay or you're anything else, you're probably not also attracted to every single person who happens to be the gender that you can be attracted to. It's a matter of you can be attracted to everybody, not you are attracted to everybody.
Right.
I think pretty much everybody has types that they go for. And that's true for bisexuals as well, for the most part. And the other thing that I get a lot is, particularly with guys, I think just because of the socialization that we get and things from media. Oh, great. Let's have a three-way. I am bisexual.
Yeah. No, I don't want to have a threesome with you and someone else.
Not everyone who's bisexual feels the same way. I am bisexual and also extremely monogamous. Like, not gonna have a three-way with you. This is not like an open invitation to, like, I don't know, fulfill that particular fantasy. And I know that that's something that a lot of bisexual women in particular get a lot on social, not social media, but like dating apps and things, is if you say you're bisexual on there, then you're going to get a ton of people coming in and going, oh my gosh, fulfill my three-way fantasy. And there might be some who are open to that. Like, cool, good on them. I'm not one of them. Please don't assume that everyone who's bisexual is one of them. So that's fun.
Yeah. Amy, you touched on a lot of great additional points that Victoria did not bring as well. So, and that's again one of the reasons why we wanted to have kind of these open intersectionality points here, because while Victoria did touch on a lot of really amazing things, you brought some amazing stuff to the table as well. Janice in the chat, you know, you can be attracted, not you are attracted to everyone. Or not everyone, but both male and female. Those are just like some key things. Again, having these different vantage points from our intersectionality is so important, and really keeping to have these conversations with everyone is why, you know, it's so important to keep this conversation going. So thank you for your time and bringing everything you brought with us today. Happy Pride.
Yeah, happy Pride.
All right. Well, in the aspect of keeping everything going here, we're going to move into just the last part here. I'm actually going to open it up to Matt. I've done a lot of talking. I don't want to talk everyone's face off, but Matt and I actually come from a subset community of HIV positive. So, Matt?
Yeah, we do. Oddly enough, it's one of the things that drew me to Ryan's Grindr profile, into this adorable face. But it's something that we have a lot of discussions about, and we've each had kind of unique experiences with finding out we were HIV positive and how we confront it in our own lives. And especially for the gay and trans community, it's something that's kind of been ingrained in us since we came out. For example, my parents didn't care that I was gay. The first concern they had is, oh my God, you're going to get AIDS and die, which Ryan and I are living examples. You can take your one pill a day, be perfectly healthy. But that's kind of the crafted reality that the straight world has created for us. And I think oftentimes it creates a lot of fear and anxiety of something that now is much more manageable. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of systemic struggles being HIV positive. For example, if you say that at work, you could be put on an ADA list since HIV is an ADA compliance subset. In addition, there are a lot of states that have extremely restrictive laws, and the state we live in, Ohio, is one of them. So obviously I would never do this now because I have him. But Ohio's laws pretty much state that if I were to go on a first date and I wanted to start making out with a guy even, I'd pretty much have to disclose my status. And if I don't, it's a class 2 felony that can get me up to 20 years in prison. It's not based on transmission. It's not based on intent to transmit. It's just the fact that I have a disease, which, again, because I'm undetectable, I can't pass on to anyone else. And really, the frankly homophobic power structures that create the laws that place those restrictions on us. And that's something that the gay community, or the gay agenda, if you will, is starting to address. They realize that the HIV/AIDS epidemic did not end in the 80s, even though it's much more manageable now, but they're trying to take away some of the systemic or structural injustices that that community faces as well.
Yeah. And a couple of points that you kind of touched on there, I think, is really amazing is A, yeah, we've had very similar experiences in the coming out process, where like that was a primary concern with my parents as well. But another point that you kind of touched on was that ability to have this disease that is supposedly, you know, the life-ending disease, right? But here we are living proof. I think I'm pretty healthy. You're pretty healthy.
Yeah.
We both take our medication, so, you know, we're medication compliant.
And can you explain a little bit about what U equals U means?
Yeah. So actually, this is a really cool thing. The CDC officially came forward because it refused to take a stance on this for a while. Now they have. So basically, when you take your medication, you have what's called your viral load in your body, and that suppresses the virus from reproducing in your body to a point to where it becomes basically undetectable in your blood. When they take your blood and they test it for the virus, they either can't detect it at all, or it's kind of fluctuates between what the number is, but most people operate on the less than 20 per volume they measure. So essentially that means you are at an undetectable status, which means you are untransmissible. So U equals U means untransmissible. You cannot actually give the disease to someone. Before, they used to believe that, you know, okay, if you like have sex with somebody or you expose your blood to someone, even if you are undetectable, you could transmit it. After tons of studies that they've done and research behind it, they have been able to certifiably say, okay, if you are taking your medication compliant, you're undetectable, you cannot transmit the disease to someone. So I could literally cut my hand and put it into a cup, not that I would ever do this because that's wild, but and have someone drink it, and they wouldn't be able to pick it up for me. At least by the CDC standards, the way we understand the virus, that should not be a concern. Somebody who's medication compliant, not somebody that you should be afraid of or worried about. I'll never forget, I was out with some friends, and a friend of a friend took a sip of from a drink after me. And then I had to have a discussion with them to explain like why they shouldn't be afraid of getting HIV from me because they took a drink from my drink. And it's again, it's that education thing. I was willing to come to the table to meet that person and kind of quell their fear and bring that understanding. And that's kind of one of the big points of everything that we're doing tonight, is really helping making sure that we're operating not just allies outside of the community, but allies within it. We are all allies to each other, advocating for each other. And that's actually one final point that I wanted to bring up. I host a charity walk. There's going to be some information that I'll be posting on my personal pages about it, but it is to benefit HIV treatment and testing in the local community here in Dayton. But if anybody is interested in participating in that in some way, you can do so virtually. It will be happening in October. I won't speak too much more about it there. I'll just leave it at that. But I would love any support from the community. Any kind of donations or time or just participation is all appreciated, because it does go to advocate for HIV positive people in the local Dayton community here where I'm from. But that being said, we had a lot of really amazing people come and share their stories and experiences. I wish we had so much more time to share with everyone. I've already taken so much of your time already. You know, it's so important that everyone is willing to kind of sit down and watch this and enjoy hearing everyone's stories with us. We'll go ahead and invite Julie and UA back on.
Hey!
Hey, Julie.
Oh, I'm still here. Okay, I'm here. You guys hopefully here soon. This was so amazing. I just want to say, like, I have personally learned so much. Thank you so much for leading this. And thank you to all the speakers that came out tonight. You all, like, were, again, just like the right mix of, you know, entertaining, but also insightful, educational. Like, we all walked away learning so much and really, you know, supporting each other in this community.
I got to say, I've been part of a few Pride talks in the last week, and this was the most informative. I was like, what's something new I'm going to learn in this one in the next hour? I have an ongoing list of all the new information I learned. And just, I think it's just so enlightening to hear this talk about identity, because I guess, like, for me, Amy talking about the default being heterosexual, it's true. Like, we all default to that, and we can't. There's a shift going right now, and I feel it. And I feel like this is no longer the default. And it's fascinating to see the shift. And I'm so excited for what's to come.
Yeah. And I think that's all thanks to all of the diverse people that we were able to bring on. And again, I just want to thank everyone. I know Matt is as well appreciative of everyone. So thank you all so much for coming and sharing your experiences with us.
Thank you, Ryan and Matt, for doing this entire talk. You guys need a spinoff show. That's what Julie was texting me about.
I was. Spinoff. Okay, so shall we wrap it up in true Dateable fashion all together?
Let's do it.
We got to give it a stay dateable at the end, right? Everyone at home, do this also in your homes. Yell it from the rooftops.
Stay dateable.
Happy Pride.
Happy Pride.
The Dateable Podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.
Want to continue the conversation? First, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter with the handle @DatablePodcast. Tag us in any post with the hashtag #StayDatable, and trust us, we look at all of those posts. Then head over to our website, datablepodcast.com. There you'll find all the episodes, as well as articles, videos, and our coaching service with vetted industry experts. You can also find our premium Why series, where we dissect, analyze, and offer solutions to some of the most common dating conundrums. We're also downloadable for free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Overcast, Stitcher Radio, and other podcast platforms. Your feedback is valuable to us, so don't forget to leave us a review. And most importantly, remember to stay dateable.